And it is the best of the Lauren and Fritz Five. No, we're not doing a best of episode.
No, we're not.
This is our best of 2010.
Yes.
Which I'm still grasping to the, I did it again today. I saw something that was 2010 and called it 2000, and I thought it was 2010, not 2011.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking by March, I'll be in the thick of it. I'll be in the swing of things.
Yeah.
And I'll know how to do the correct date.
Yep.
But every now and again, I still get a little tripped up, although you think, how hard is it to really figure out the date? And it's funny because by the end of this year, when it's about to be 2012, you're going to be like, man, I can't remember 2012. I'm all about 2011. It's a perpetuating issue that we're just going to have to deal with.
So, but anyways, it is February and we're doing this. We're so late because we had to get some time to figure this out.
I had to work on my best albums list diligently to really get it the way I wanted it. And I was even telling you before we started the podcast that we need to do this now, because a month from now I'm going to look at this list and go, oh.
Completely regret just, it. I see one regret already.
Oh, really? One regret already? Well, let's start. Go ahead. What's the regret already?
Well, no. I got to save this for a little bit. So Okay. Anyway, so I don't really – I should start off. I don't have, let alone a top 10 or a top 20 albums of the year, as I just haven't listened to them. And, of course, you know, my top album of the year is going to have to be Wolf Parade.
Expo 86, yes.
Yes, which I'm absolutely – I mean, I know I'm a Wolf Parade fanboy, I'm a junkie and all that good stuff, but the fact that it didn't even make a top 50 list on Pitchfork, considering, if I'm not mistaken, I know for a fact it was on pretty high on the list, was their first one, apologies to the Queen Mary. The second one, I'm pretty sure, also made the top 50.
No, it didn't.
Oh, okay. All right.
If I were to guess... I mean, I can't say for the Pitchfork list why. I can say for me personally why I really like the first album, and the other albums I've enjoyed but haven't really clocked them in is, I don't know if it's just that the band got really esoteric, and not that their music was that experimental and out there, but there seemed to be a grounded nature to that first record, in which the songs, even if they weren't about relatable things, they sounded like they were about relatable things. And they had songs, you know, with choruses that made sense in a weird kind of way, were full of words that formed together into sentences that made sense. And I feel that they went out and made these sort of weird sounding songs that I listen to and enjoy but have no emotional connection to. Because I was listening to Expo 86 just the other day, because I realized I had not put it on my list. And I remember thinking, you know, I listened to it a couple times, but, you know, it didn't really resonate with me. And I went back to it thinking, because sometimes I go back to records. There are records on this list that I had initially not thought I was going to include. I went back to them and was like, oh, my gosh, how did I overlook you? And
Yeah. No, I get what you're saying.
I went back and listened to it, and I was like, there's just something missing. It's good music. It's well made. But the music isn't connecting to me in a way. It's almost that they went out of their way to just keep me at an arm's length. I feel a great connectedness, and I don't know. Yeah, like,
I feel like you're just trying to break it to me softly. Like, I feel just want to let you down gently. That album sucked.
If I did not like that album, I would tell you.
That is true.
I know. I did like the record.
That's why we have the podcast, because we can tell each other things like
that. Exactly. We can be real talking all the time.
Real talk.
It just didn't connect with me. And I mean, I would say
I'll give you that. We got to keep moving on, because we're going to run out of time if we keep talking about.
What's really funny though is that when Mount Zoomer came out, I initially thought, okay, this one's kind of keeping me distant, and when Expo 86 came out, I said, okay, I'm liking this one a lot more. But I think I like Mount Zoomer more than Expo 86.
Huh.
I think it has a couple more songs that still were close to that original first album sound.
Yeah, I'll
get at the
that.
Same time, as we'll get to when we talk about the new Strokes single in a little bit, Wolf Parade still sound like Wolf Parade in their own quality way. Although I was thinking about this because I was trying to quantify what was wrong with the new Strokes single, not to give away my feelings on it. And I realized, like, there's no real way that you can say, like, this is the right way to create art.
Well,
let's dive into the Strokes song. First of all, it's not good. There you go, right off the bat.
I'm gonna disagree. I was enjoying myself.
Okay.
I was. Now, first of all, did they change lead singers?
No.
Because that's the first thing I noticed. Is this the same singer? Because he sounds very high pitched. Very. What's the lead singer's name? It's not Julian. Julian Casablanca? Okay.
Julian Casablancas. Yes.
So Julian, I think he was always revered for his rough, gravelly, untrained voice. That was the charm on the first album. Then by Room on Fire, it was kind of like, oh, this fucker can't sing. You know what I mean? Like, it went from no one really liked it at that point. But,
well, what it was that he was using that sort of like voice box distortion, not like a vocoder or autotune, but just he was using this sort of distorted effect on his voice.
Yeah.
And
it sounds better than a vocoder, but whatever.
Yes. And that's what they did for the first two records. And then they dropped it for album number three. And, I mean, honestly, his vocals are really not even the third album's biggest problem.
Well, it sounds like he's practicing on this new single, though. It sounds like maybe he took some lessons, because he's hitting notes that I've never heard on the Strokes before. I think that's why I'm saying it doesn't sound like the same singer. But it sounds like the damn Strokes.
I don't know. It sounds really I think the best thing, I'm going to quote McCarty's wife, who I was chatting about this on Twitter with right before we did this. I sent it to her, and what she said back was, yuck, the whole thing sounds so dated / feeble / unnecessary / Green Day. And I kind of agree.
Ouch.
It's not a strong track. It's not a we're back after 5 years right out the gates. The production is very thin. I don't think the guitars don't have. They sound like just a touch out of tune, which I think they were trying to go for. But the problem is, this all comes back to Death Magnetic, and Metallica's Saint Anger. Once you're guys who make millions of dollars and record in million-dollar studios, you cannot try to make your music. You cannot spend $1 million to make it sound like a dollar.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, the garage sound.
The garage sound. You can't manufacture. Now, if you go into a legitimate garage and record it on a tape deck, okay.
That sounded too poor. I thought its production value was the same as the first two albums, because that's what I'm most familiar with.
I would disagree. This sounds.
I mean, I just streamed it on YouTube, so I didn't get a high quality rip of it. But I mean,
the YouTube stream was basically what they because you couldn't get to the website to download the MP3. Like their website crashed like right after they posted it, and then Julian Casablancas went on his Twitter and said, "Just go to this YouTube link if you want to hear it."
Now,
so that's like an official band sanctioned YouTube rip. So
now I'm going to go back to your previous statement here, because the Strokes have always been a band where I enjoyed their music, but I never sat there and felt emotionally involved with the Strokes. I never sat, you know, I listened to the first two albums and I like them a lot, but except for last night, like I never find myself singing to them in the car or whatever. And I listened to this and I bobbed my head and I jammed and I thought, you know, oh, it's kind of interesting. It sounds like the Strokes, but I'm telling you, I'm old school. I'm just, like, let me tell you right now, Lauren, where I'm at, because this is going to shock you. One of my other favorite albums of the year has got to be Toadie's Feeler.
I thought you didn't like that one.
See, now this is something that happened to me, was I felt so bad that I finally bought an album and I didn't like it, that I listened to it again. And then what happened was I was just curious, because I know that the album was recorded earlier. So the Toadies, they recorded this album. It was supposed to be the follow-up to Rubberneck, which had Possum Kingdom on it. And then the record label rejected it. So then they ended up coming back in 2001, breaking up, whatever. So they re-recorded that album because it never saw the light of day. Well, the original recordings have leaked onto the internet, of course. So I listened to the original recordings, and somehow it made me appreciate the new recordings. And I'm just, the Toadie sound, just that 90s sound, like I felt like I was 16 again listening to a grunge album that had just come out. Like, for some reason, the song, I mean, technically the album is not good. If you listen to it, you would laugh at me and say, Fritz, what the hell's going on? But for some reason, it gave me these feelings of like when I listened to the Toadies for the first time when I was a little kid. Like, the songs have that same sort of gritty, like a bar sound to them. Like, it's a bar band. But for some reason, I think it's really, really good. Like, it really makes me happy. Like, I love listening to that album, even though technically it's got a couple of bad songs. There's only 9 of them, and there's probably only like 4 or 5 standouts. But even then, I don't know why, but I love this album. You have to be like a diehard 90s like I am.
Well, lately I've been going back, because what I do is once I get my best of list done, I then go and dive into old albums that nothing new has really come out yet.
Clear the palette for 2011.
Exactly. So I listened to a bunch of old Nirvana. I went and listened to a bunch of older Jay-Z albums that I've been kind of neglecting. By the way, everybody, The Dynasty, Rock La Familia, I've been sleeping on that record. It's awesome. Anyway, but to get to the Strokes, the first two Strokes albums, I think, are
Which
really...
the second is, isn't that Room on Fire with 1251?
Second, yeah.
Okay,
second
okay, yeah.
Yeah. The first Strokes album, which I think a lot of people overlook, is hilarious. It's really funny. Alone Together is really funny. And I the thing I like about the songs on the first record especially is they feel very tossed off. They don't feel ultra polished. What they feel like is a bunch of guys got in a room who all happened to be super fucking talented, and they just blew it out.
And also drunk.
And also drunk.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
And it was fantastic. It was gritty. It was raw. That's what it felt like. I couldn't agree with
you. Yes, exactly. Exactly. And then the second album, I believe it is a more polished version than the first record, but it still has all of those attributes.
Yeah.
It's once they started fucking with the formula on record number 3 and started to be taking themselves seriously and trying to make serious ballads, which I'll never forget. I saw them touring First Impressions of Earth, and they played the ballad from that album, and this guy in front of me goes, "Fuck is this shit? I came here to hear the Strokes."
I'll tell you, I've never heard the album. I have to agree with you because of the fact that, yes, I've never heard the album because I'm a fan of the Strokes, and I gave up at that point. I didn't even hit my radar that they had a third album.
Spoken like someone who knows Lauren Guastella. That's all I've got to say. That's yeah. And so, I mean, Lauren, I just want to mention, has been hating on this record, this new Strokes record, and even though she hasn't heard a lick of it, just because she's like, it's not going to be good. Not going to be good. That's Lauren's thing, you know.
Well, if you go into anything thinking it's not going to be good, it's not going to be good.
Well, I mean, we had this, her and I had a long conversation recently where we talked about all the great bands of the early 2000s and mid-2000s have since pooped out and delivered basically one stellar record and then diminished returns.
Yeah.
And then we kind of went through the list of all these great bands from the early and mid-2000s. Block Party, Interpol,
Black Party's gone now, aren't they? Like, they broke up. He's doing a solo thing, I know that.
I think they're on a hiatus. I'm going to assume it's just a hiatus, only because I never saw an official headline anywhere that says Block Party breakup.
Yeah.
Also the fact that people responded to the solo record pretty much as they should have with a, this isn't that good, you guys.
No.
So...
that last one they put out there has really grown on me, though. I was really against electronics, and then it really ends up hitting me over time.
It's not a bad record. You know, Block Party isn't the worst offender in that, but at the same time, the first Block Party record is amazing.
Well, how do you go from the gritty sound to this ultra-polished, you know, of course, but that's what I'm saying is at first I rejected it because it didn't sound like the first album, but now that I listen to it, I really do enjoy that album.
I guess for me is that record's too long. If we're going to talk about Block Party intimacy, it's too long. There's not enough real hooks of what they're good at.
Oh, like see, that's it, because I have it on my MP3 player, and I probably have about 6 tracks on it. I just threw them out.
Well, the actual when the album first they put it out as a digital version, you could pre-order it and you'd get 10 tracks, and then when the album proper came out, you'd get the rest of the tracks.
Oh no, Ion Square is the bomb. Ion Square is a great song.
So it's just it has all the attributes there without any of the things that made, I don't know what it is. It's missing the one, it's missing an element. It doesn't have, like, they have their moments that they just hook you in, and Intimacy lacks that. It's not a terrible record, but I know that every time I listen to it kicks off really
I
solid,
love how we're
and I'm
trying to get to the top 10 of 2010, and all we keep
talking about
talking
a
about
record
is 90s.
2008. But about halfway through Intimacy, I am exhausted because it's there's nothing, there's no groove that ever sets in and never hits you with a really good hook that you just glom onto and want to hear more of. It's just kind of labored and tired.
So New
So,
Stroke single, Ballless by Lauren, and I say Balls Out on
I
that.
think it's thin. It's not a return to form, and it's not an announcement that we are back. That's
I enjoyed it.
We shall see when the album comes out in March. We'll do a full review. Okay,
So rest
so.
now let's get into Lauren's top here.
Yes. If you'd like to read the list along at home, folks, it's at badguyswin.wordpress.com. And yeah, so we can just start. My number 25 was Dez Racist, Shut Up Dude mixtape.
Now, I can't believe We Are Scientists is so low at 24.
You know, Weird Scientist Barbara, initially it wasn't on the list. Then I was revamping the list. I went back and listened to it. It's a good record. It's really good. Number 24. It got dissed in a lot of places, got slammed by Pitchfork. But if you want a front to back We Are Scientists record and you don't want to listen to the first one and you know you can't listen to the second one, this is the one. And the thing is, I went back. The thing is that when I went back to the second record just makes it has a lot of good songs on it, but it makes too many mistakes of trying to branch out and do what you shouldn't. And also, as Rachel pointed out, because Rachel loves We Are Scientists and she loves Barbara and she loves the first record, is that she doesn't want to hear slow ballads and she doesn't want to hear just weird distortion and effects and stuff. She just wants to hear good, fun We Are Scientists songs. Barbara delivers that. So if you were a We Are Scientists fan on the first record and you fell off with the second record, come on back. They're back with you on the third one.
Well, when you put it like that, I'm glad it's made the list then, because I have heard songs off of Barbara and I do enjoy that album.
Yeah, it's
R.
got this.
Kelly, nah.
Oh, love this record.
Nah.
Such a record.
Now, I won't say this about any other letter, but I mean, this one just seems like you're, I don't know, you're just throwing him a bone here, because When a Woman Loves a Man or whatever the hell that track is, it's not that good, man. It's not
That's
that good.
the weakest song on the record. I don't know why he put that one out as the first single
Oh,
because.
I'll tell you why. Working in my retail job in a record type store, I got asked about that song the second that thing started hitting the airwaves. I had to tell people, "Oh, the release date isn't this," and it was for the first 2 weeks, people asking about that song all day long. Except for they kept calling it "When a Man Loves a Woman," which kept putting "When a Man" in my head over and over again, which kind of sucked. But no, I don't think it's a quality song, and I doubt it's
Well,
a quality record.
the record, there's just so many good, fun. I mean, Love Letter is a really fun song. Not Feeling the Love is a really good song. I mean, it's just he has a lot more upbeat ones, and it's just a real fun, real solid groove record. I like it a lot. And also, having listened to the last few of his albums, which have been very hit and miss, it was very refreshing to hear a record that kind of toned down the crazy a little bit and just focused on the songs, which is definitely what this album does. Because his last record, Untitled, that has a couple pretty good songs on it, but it also has your crazy moments on it. It also has Pregnant, which is still one of my favorites, but you can't do that. And this is just, I mean, just the fact that I can just put it on and just listen to it all the way through is rather remarkable. And it's just a lot of fun. I think R. Kelly is back with this record, you know?
Well, Pillow Talk, I believe, is in a perfect location.
Oh, Pilot Talk.
Pilot Talk, what did I call it? Pillow Talk, jeez, oh,
Pilot Talk.
beans. Yeah, sorry, Pilot Talk, anyways, Currency. I did enjoy that album. I did hear that, actually.
Dudes have an amazing flow. The rhymes are, I mean, if you've ever said, I want to hear a rapper who just raps about how he's high all the time and he's awesome because of it, Currency,
Yeah.
he's your guy. I mean, Pilot Talk and Pilot Talk 2, both. I mean, I think Pilot Talk's just a little better than Pilot Talk 2, but you know, both really great records. And yeah, Currency, I think he's only gonna get bigger.
He's just smooth, man. That's what I really like.
Super smooth. Super smooth.
Well, Ghostface Killah, 21. That's,
Apollo Kids.
I mean, it's a Lauren list. I mean, it's got to be on there.
Well, you know, after last year's Ghostedini, we all got a little worried because Ghostedini was not a very good record. But Ghostface was like, you know what? I'm going to make a record where I rap over soul beats and yell at people before tracks start. And it's going to be great. And he was right. So.
I'll tell you this. I saw someone in my store the other day who was wearing Woo Wear, and it made me happy because that's something I have not seen in a long time.
I know. Well, did you know? I did not know. I read about this, that initially, or this might still be the case in some places, when Woo Wear came out, RZA made a deal with some people, and he kind of cut some corners. So a lot of Woo Wear stuff that came out was not of very good quality. And there was an interview with, I want to say, Method Man. And Method Man said that he doesn't wear any Woo Wear because he doesn't wear, like, crappy clothing. Because it'll fall apart after you, like, wash it a couple times. And apparently that's been kind of a, in some circles, like, to the detriment of Woo Wear, is that people knew it was crap. You know, as opposed to...
Well, it's been replaced by Rockaway, so, I mean...
Well, yeah, but Rockaway, as I understand it, is a quality clothing line.
And that's why
stitchings are strong.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, that was in the early days of pioneering, though. You know what I mean? Wu-Tang Clan was in the early days of pioneering the clothing line.
Mm-hmm. If they did it now, you know, I have a Wu-Tang shirt I bought. I don't know if it counts as Wu wear, but I've washed it a few times, and it's held up.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
I don't fault them for being early and greedy. But anyways, I don't know a couple of these next albums, though. I haven't researched them. I haven't done anything. But what, Lidstrom and Christa Bell?
Yeah, that's a techno record. It was one of the many, you know, Pitchfork. They review them. They give them like an 8-point something, and you download them, and you're like, what is this garbage? This was one I had literally no hopes for this record because I've heard a lot of Lindstrom is this electronic producer, but half the stuff he makes is that electronic music that barely works as background music just because it's just kind of dull and there. And this record is actually very charming and very fun and very dancey. There's a song on there that sounds like it could have been on Michael Jackson's Off the Wall. It was just a big surprise record for me. And I just kept going back to it and digging it a lot. Of course, the last couple tracks get kind of weird and loopy. Like one track sounds like an earlier track would play backwards or something. But I figured that was the price of admission. You know what I mean? Like, okay, I got a bunch of really good songs. There's going to be a couple weird ones. But, yeah, it's a really good dance record.
Well, Gold Frap, I don't know anything about either. That's 19.
Gold Frap, she had her... This is the funny thing. A lot of the people on this list, like, their last records was garbage. And now they're, like, back. Gold Frap was the same thing. This is actually, I think, the best Gold Frap record. She just has just a lot of fun, upbeat songs. You know, that's me. I love fun and upbeat. The best songs on it are probably Rocket and Alive. And Alive is basically about getting up in the morning, putting on some tight jeans, and taking on the world. Who can't relate to that, Fritz?
As long as you don't look like P. Diddy, I'm fine with that.
There you go. Number 18, Illumination by Miami Horror.
No, nothing on that one either.
Basically, if you've been the type of person like myself who has wondered when will Daft Punk make another record at least as good as Discovery or in the same vein, well, I don't know when Daft Punk are going to do it, but Miami Horror did it with Illumination. The record sounds like this guy has been working on making the follow-up to Discovery because one day he was like, you know what, Daft Punk are never going to do it, I'll do it. And so if you like Daft Punk Discovery, and you would like to hear more music that sounds like that, Illumination will fit the bill just fine.
Now, I did listen to Tobacco because the cover just draws you right in.
It does.
You can't see that cover, and I know this is audio recording only, but it is a beefed up man with a beard, and for some reason has female lips and eyes, and is standing in front of a what looks like a skillet of fried chicken. It just really makes you sound back, but the cover sounds like the band, I must say.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I think the way I wrote it, because let me tell you, I when you know writing about music, you know, is, as they say, like dancing about architecture. It's really hard to put into words what something sounds like because it really doesn't make sense. You know what I mean? Besides saying it's loud.
Yeah.
You know, you can more go with a more of like a visceral feeling or how it made you feel. It sounded pretty to me. But the only way I could describe it as it sounds like a fuzzed out guitar run through a vacuum cleaner sound effect on top of breakbeats. And the vocals, with the exception of Beck, who sounds like Beck on a couple songs.
Oh, I hate Beck though. So I listened to one of those songs and I went, forget this.
Okay. Well, if you like Beck, he sounds like Beck, but the rest of it, Tobacco, he sounds like he's a serial killer leaving you a voicemail. That's really the only way to describe it.
Well, we gotta skip out of here a couple because okay. We're running out of time. But French Solar by French Solar.
French Solar, yes.
Oh, French Solar, excuse me.
Yes. Yeah, dance rock, really good. McCarty's a fan. His wife's a fan. Everybody play it is a big fan.
Klaxons make it on here. I'm very surprised by that. I'm very happy to hear that.
New Klaxons record is hot fire, man. They continue to make songs about flying through space while high on drugs, reading heady novels.
You know, if you're flying through space not on drugs, I feel sorry for you.
It's true.
We got Liars, Sister Ward, or Sister World.
Yeah, Liars, those guys just basically have perfected their sound of basically making really good rock tracks that still have this strange, arty sound to them. Because I really, you know, I for the longest time, I hated their second record and would call it the worst album I ever heard. I recently listened to it. I can downgrade it just because I can listen to it front to back and not want to kill myself. Well, there are certain albums I've heard since then that do make me want to kill myself. They make difficult records, but they write really good rock songs. This album is a lot darker than their last one. This album is really just, it has a creeping dread to it, which they've really put on their videos. Their videos have the video for I don't even know the song. The first single from Sister World, the video for it is it will fucking creep you out. It's real good.
All right, Jaguar Love, Hologram Jams.
Yes, basically two lead singers from Blood Brothers decided to form another band, broke up Blood Brothers. They did an album with that band. I don't think that first album is all that good. Then they fired the drummer. They decided to write all their songs with the drum machine. And now they're just going crazy and screaming about being high on caffeine and riding Mastodons to prom. And they do a cover of Peace of My Heart, which is one of my favorite things I've ever heard. And now they're just writing kind of crazy dance songs for kids. It's fantastic. Buy it for all your friends.
Cinema Club, Tourist History by Two Door Cinema, Tourist History.
Yes. If you really like dancing, more great dance rock.
Don't dance the night away.
Yeah. This is the album that Lauren sent to me and with nothing. She just sent me this album with like no comment. And when I initially listened to it, she had dismissed another album that I really like that's coming up. And so I didn't like it. Which I very rarely ever do that. Normally I can listen to everything, you know, without prejudice, just take it as it is and rate it. But I was so mad at her that I was like, I hate that record you sent me. And then I sent it to everybody, though, to see if they'd back me up. And everyone's like, you crazy, this album's great. And so I went back and listened. I'm like, this is actually really fun and really good. And now here we are, 7 months later. And it's number 12 on my list. So there you go. Happy ending for everybody.
Well, it's the second album on the list, by the way, that has a cat on the cover. I'll notice that.
It is.
Violins, Amoral.
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 Yes.
Looks like Amoral to me.
It's Amoral.
Good.
It is basically a mix of sort of like a dance rock sound, which I don't know if you can tell. I really like dance rock. And mixed with an 80s radio sound, like just the sound of 80s radio, you know what I mean? The songs that were popular on the radio in the 80s, that sound, that production sound added to 2000s-ish dance rock. It's a really good record. There's actually a song on here that sounds like Sloan, so that's always going to be good in my book.
So it's Yaysayers, but they actually put out a fully decent album instead of mostly crap.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, because the Yaysayer album has a song or two, but overall you can't front to back it. Yeah, this violins record's way better.
All right, then we got Bag Raiders.
Number 10, yep. Bag Raiders, when I first heard it, I said, oh, this is to fill the time until Cut Copy's new album comes out. And I kind of dismissed him like that. Like, oh, they're just a band from Australia who make dance music a lot like Cut Copy. But the songs are just super hooky, just giant hooks. They got great beats. There's not a bad song on this record. It's just a dance party. And I believe it might be like Lauren's like number two album of the year for everybody there. So I really like that one.
Well, my number five album of the year is coming up at number nine for you, Deftones' Diamond Eyes.
Deftones, man, so great. Such a great record.
The only bad part is I feel bad that the bass player's not on it. You know what I mean? Because he's in a coma.
It is too bad. Well, it's one of those things where, you know, for them to finally come back and make a really good album again, this tragedy had to happen. But we have this record. It's fantastic. And they do everything right. I mean, I think when we were rating this record, I think I rated it like third in their discography, like below the self-titled and Around the Fur. But I feel it might be like at least second, if not one of their best ones.
You know, I'm personally, for some reason, it has eclipsed the Adrenaline for me. I mean, Adrenaline will always have a personal place in my heart, but for some reason, if I have a chance to listen to Adrenaline or Diamond Eyes, I usually choose Diamond Eyes because of the production.
Production's great.
It's just a great album. Then we got Diddy Dirty Money making it at number eight. This one just came out, if I'm not mistaken. Correct?
It did. It is. Yeah, it came out in December. This record is so great, you guys.
It makes it to number eight. I mean, I know you were raving.
It's Diddy has managed to make a concept record about Diddy interesting and exciting to listen to. This record is about Diddy contemplating his life as a player, as a baller.
Oh,
as
come on.
Band.
It's all about the special guests on this record.
But the thing is that it's all still about Diddy. Do you know what I mean? Like, because he is this over, like, even when he's not rapping or what have you on it, it's still all about him. He's created this theme early on and that he touches on when he appears on the album, where he is reflecting on his life and reflecting on mistakes, and it works.
Even when all I have to say is, even when it's about Diddy, it's about Notorious B.I.G. That's all there is to it.
Oh, I mean, don't get me wrong. Notorious B.I.G. is on this record, and he's been dead since 97.
Oh, he's not dead. Him and Tupac are chilling. We all know that. Tupac and Biggie chilling, drinking a Corona right now.
Drinking a Corona?
Yeah, because they got to be in Mexico or somewhere. You know what I mean? They can't be. They're not driving a cab in Florida. Come on.
Okay.
They're at least in Mexico.
But it's just the production is amazing. He managed to just buy the best beats from people I've never heard of, with the exception of Swizz Beatz. But of course, Swizz Beatz is great. It's funny because when I listen to these songs, even songs, I feel like in the past, you could almost say like, okay, this song is 5 minutes long, but it's really just telling me I'm the bomb for 5 minutes, and it's boring and tiresome. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But there's a song in here called Ass on the Floor. And when you hear the chorus, you think, oh, this is a song about everybody dancing. That's what it's about. But when you listen to it, you realize what it's really about is about someone going to the bar, or the club, I should say not the bar, going to the club, in this case, Diddy or Dirty Money, as it were, and getting drunk and then seeing that person who dissed you or broke your heart or broke it off with you, and you're drunk and you're in their face and you're the jerk. Do you know what I mean? And I was not expecting that level of nuance to show up on these songs. And it does over and over again, track after track. I'm like, what is with this insight and nuance? I mean, I'm not saying that he's blowing my mind, but it's just, I was not blowing my mind with his insights, but the fact that he has that level of empathy towards other people being going on, I guess is that the self-proclaimed God has admitted that he is a man, and I am glad.
That's too deep, man. It's just a Diddy record. It's just a Diddy record, Lord.
Okay, all right.
So we got LCD Sound System, number seven.
This is happening.
Flockavelli by Waka Flocka Flame, which I have heard. Well, I haven't heard this entire record. I heard the single, and
Hard
damn,
in the Paint.
Lauren, number six. Yeah,
number six. Here's the thing. When this album came out, there were a bunch of think pieces on it. Think pieces, not reviews, but think pieces, where they talked about the fact that Rock Flock Flame doesn't really have any lyrics. He's proud of the fact that he doesn't really have any lyrics, and how Method Man had come out and said, "Yeah, that guy's garbage." But then, a couple weeks later, Method Man's like, "You know what? No, he's pretty good." And the article, I read a couple articles, basically made that point that at first you will think he's terrible, and then you will have to admit that this album is great. And the first time I listened to this album, I turned it off to two songs. I said, no, this guy's terrible. They were right. But then I went back to it. Like, I was drawn back. And I went and I listened to it, like, front to back. And it blew me away. It's just a vibrant, hard record. It's the hardest record of the year. It's harder than any metal record I heard anywhere. Lex Luger, the producer on this, 19. I don't know how you can be this good at 19. He's either going to flame out hard or he will be the world's greatest producer in 5 years. Just he brings this hard sound that I just cannot get enough of. And it's just really, really good.
He sounds like a shitty, very, like, I can't even stress, but a shitty Lil Wayne is what he sounds like to me. Like, he is just, I don't think he has any style. I don't think he has any soul. I don't think Waka Flocka Flame is just garbage to me.
I don't know. It's just, he just goes hard in the paint, as the song goes. And
mean? That doesn't even mean anything.
What, hard in the paint? You don't know what that means?
Ugh, maybe I'm just not from the hood, Lauren.
It's a basketball term, first. Because when you go hard in the paint, that means you're driving the lane trying to score a point. So it's a basketball term. But he's saying when he goes hard in the paint, meaning that he's in the clutch, he's always driving to win. And really, every song in this album does not feel insincere. Insincere. He doesn't sound like a poser. He's just rapping about being on the streets and shooting people because he's got to, because that's the streets. And I find it very endearing. And also, by the way, he's got incredible beats behind him. If you know, I mean, here's the thing. A lot of people were repping that Rick Ross album, and I've got to believe half of them are repping it just because the beats are really good. But Rick Ross, I find him boring. I can't even listen to him. I get so bored listening to him.
Teflon Don? Come on.
Teflon.
I would take that over Waka Flocka any day.
See, I think Teflon Don is a boring record because Rick Ross is a boring person. And in comparison, Waka Flocka Flame just has this energy and this style. But I mean, I will admit, every time a guest shows
style
up,
style that's ripped off. He doesn't. Oh, it just. Sounds
I don't think
so
he sounds
generic
like,
to me.
I don't know. I just dig this record a lot. I listen to it. Here's the thing: if I'm going back to a record, like just like, oh man, I gotta listen to this record again. And it's just, I mean, fuck the club up track. It's all in, right. And he's got these great ad libs. I think he's fantastic. He just has to keep making. I mean, he needs to keep making songs with Lex Luger.
We're already over time, so we got to hurry it up. Enough about Flocka. So the Dream,
we'll
Love King.
Yes, the Dream. He's amazing. Hope he keeps making records.
Groove Armada.
This is the one that when it came out, I read a bunch of reviews, and they said this is going to divide the Groove Armada fan base. I said, what are you talking about? And it did. I love it. Lauren hates it. And Lauren loves Groove Armada. But this record, they decided to make an album that sounds like a band, lots of live instruments, nods to 70s and 80s pop, like Fleetwood Mac. It's fantastic. I love it.
Chemical Brothers further?
Best Chemical Brothers album. Did not think they would ever. Their last record was garbage. This record is incredible. This record is amazing. If you have given up on the Chemical Brothers, stop giving up. Go back to them. They have further. It will change your life.
Still not as good as Black Rock and Beat, though. It just the Salmon Dance is really good, but I mean,
no, Salmon Dance is, oh god, the Salmon Dance. I hate it so much. Ugh. That's Salmon Dance was so bad that when they said New Chemical Brothers album came out, I did not listen to any of the songs that they leaked for it.
Did
any
I say
of the
it was good? Because I didn't mean to say that.
Yeah, Salmon Dance is so bad, but. With this, they make up for it. There's no guests. They just bring hard dance beats, and Swoon is easily the best Chemical Brothers song. Easily. It's insane.
So we got Khalees, Fleshtone, number two.
Yes, Lauren is fighting me about this. She said it should have been number one. It's really, really great. It's, you know, if you're going, it's really an album that shouldn't be as great as it is, because it basically, Khalees said, I'm going to make a dance record about my baby. Doesn't really sound that good on paper. It's fantastic. And she managed to get just banger beats for every track. So every track's a banger. And it says something when, you know, one of my favorite songs of last year was a dance song that's just a letter to a baby. It's super great.
All right. So number one is the one I can't believe you put at number one. Like, number one, I feel like just because Pitchfork put it as number one, that's why you gave it consideration in number one.
No way. Kanye West, My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy, moment I heard it. I mean, on all the build-up, I was very hyped for it. But I still thought there's not really – can he meet that hype? And he did. This record is insane. This record is crazy. This record is the best Kanye West record. It has the best production he's ever done. He's never rapped better, which I know in some areas is faint praise, but it's true. And he just managed to just bring – I mean, there's so many tracks on this record that are career best for anybody. Power, All the Lights, Devil in a New – is it New Dress, Blue Dress? I'm blanking on that one.
Devil in a New Dress.
Devil in a New Dress, Lost in the World. It's – such a great Monster, which I know everyone's like, oh man, Nicki Minaj is the only good part of that. Kanye's verse on Monster is awesome too, you guys. Just that Nicki Minaj is really good.
Is not really good. I don't think Nicki Minaj sounds good at all. I think Nicki Minaj only sounds good because she's black and looks like Lady Gaga. I don't think Nicki Minaj can sing at all. If you ever listen to any live performances,
For some reason, she's decided to go this singing R&B route, which is not her strength. She has all these songs that require her to sing. It's a terrible idea. None of those songs are any good. Pink Friday, her album, is a failure in my eyes because it doesn't capitalize.
That's what I've heard from Nicki Minaj, is that Pink Friday and that.
Oh yeah, I know. That's bad. But Nicki Minaj guest appearances, Nicki Minaj on Monster. Amazing. Nicki Minaj on Robin Thicke's Shaking It for Daddy, also amazing.
I did not think that Kanye West rapped well. I know that's probably not a rap term using proper terminology, but I see for me, Kanye West, ever since I discovered that he's an ignorant douchebag, I never think that anything that he's writing is really clever. Like, I used to think when you heard like Gold Digger and stuff like that, you go, wow, he's being really clever. He's not being really clever. He's just a fucking idiot. And somehow, when you put his stuff up next to a beat, it somehow sounds clever. Like, that South Park episode about Kanye West, about the fish dicks, just sums it up perfectly, sums it up amazingly. Kanye West, I don't think, knows what the fuck he's doing. I think Kanye West is just lucky.
I don't know. That's some luck to make as many great albums as he's made. I don't know. I was listening to another podcast. Oh, I know, blasphemy. And they had this same debate of whether or not Kanye West is this interesting, exciting artist, or if he is just an asshole. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
that's basically what
I'm
saying.
I'm in the asshole camp. Yeah,
and I would argue that he just is an asshole who also happens to just make really great music, and being an asshole is part of his appeal, for me.
Now, I do let emotions play a lot into the music that I listen to. Like, if I find out someone's a douchebag, I inherently like their music less. You know what I mean?
Really?
Even if you meet a chick who's not that cute, but then she ends up being really cool, you're like, oh, wow, she is kind of cute. You know what I mean? Like,
you're trying to tell me that you're not superficial?
Well, you meet a chick that's really hot, and you're like, oh, God, wow, she's really hot. And then she opens her mouth, and then you're like, oh, my God, like, she's nasty, you know what I mean? Like, oh, that's gross. Like, that's what I feel about Kanye West a little bit, where, like, his entire catalog to me is just completely wasted because I don't think that he's being clever. I think he's just an idiot. I really do think Kanye West is just a big idiot. You know, and this isn't because he went and bashed Bush about Hurricane Katrina or whatever like that. I mean, that was a fucking idiotic thing to do. It's just everything that the man does, I don't believe that he's smart and clever. I don't know. He just comes across to me like the biggest idiot. And because of that, like, I mean, Jay-Z had some hot verses on this album, I must say, because I listened, obviously, to the Jay-Z tracks first, which is, I think, So Appalled. And he was on Monster, too, wasn't he?
Well, this is the thing is, I think Jay-Z's not that good on this album.
Really? Because I thought I mean, I didn't
His Monster verse is bad.
Really? I didn't think it was that bad. I didn't. His I remember Monster listening verse, to it and I didn't go like, oh shit, like, you know, how
his
Jay-Z
Monster verse
makes you feel.
His Monster verse, it's called Monster, and instead he lists a bunch of monsters. He kind of took like the most obvious route, and his flow is really slow. It's not his finest moment. Even as someone who's a hardcore Jay-Z fan, when I listened to it, I remember thinking, thank God Nicki Minaj came along and saved this song. Because it was not looking good there for a minute. Jay-Z is better on So Appalled, but it's not, you know, I mean, I would say the thing that makes me feel good is that the tracks that have been leaking from Watch the Throne, the Jay-Z Kanye West album, have been really good. And Jay-Z sounds really on fire and refreshed on it. But I don't think he's that good on this album.
Yeah, because, you know, especially that too, the whole Kanye Jay-Z thing, how they don't really get along, but yet they're trying to write music together. Like that.
Well, no, they get along. It's just that Kanye has an interesting relationship with Jay-Z, and Jay-Z is a naturally competitive person because otherwise he wouldn't be who he is and where he is. And in a way, for a while there, Kanye West had sort of eclipsed Jay-Z. And also, there was
eclipsed Jay-Z because Jay-Z wasn't putting out music. That's why. Well, Jay-Z was retired, you know. Whatever,
yeah, but well, I mean, also there is, I mean, if you listen to the Big Brother song on Graduation, and you consider the things that were going on with the first Kanye West record and how long it took for it to come out, because that record came out in January of 2004. Not your usual time to put out what you hope to be is the next big hit record. That's the truth. That record was pushed back and pushed back and pushed back. Because Kanye West, they really didn't, there wasn't a lot of support for him in Rockefeller to be an artist on his own. They loved his beats. They wanted him to keep making beats. And, I mean, this is one of those, like, heard through the rumor mill, but probably true, because when you think about it, it has to be true, that Kanye West was going to bolt and go somewhere else if they wouldn't put his record out. And they finally relented and put his record out. But they put it out in, like, you know, January, you know, and it had been delayed for a while. But it's still, because the songs are really good and Kanye West is out there pushing it hard. I mean, that guy, when that record came out, he did his darndest to be everywhere to push that record. He did Carson Daly's show. I'm just saying, everybody starts somewhere. Kanye West doesn't have to do Carson Daly's show now, but when he started, he did Carson Daly's show.
Yeah.
And he was pushing it out there.
But that was when Carson Daly was still big from TRL, though, too. Carson Daly has gotten worse over time. You have to admit
well,
that.
He doesn't even have a studio anymore. So
yeah,
but I would say, I mean, Kanye West is. I think you just maybe for you have seen too much behind the curtain because you say like, oh, he's a douchebag. I don't like him now. Most of these famous people are that way. If you see them, you know what I mean. I mean, you're gonna hear about, oh, this guy's a cool dude, but they're really more the exception to the rule. And I feel that to get to that level of, you know, greatness.
Well, I feel like if you got to hang out with either Jay-Z or Kanye West, obviously you'd choose Jay-Z, right? And you'd hang out with Jay-Z, and by the end of it, you would probably say, Jay-Z's really kind of a douchebag, because all Jay-Z's talking about is he's talking about, you know, his bar, he's talking about his vodka, he's talking about his Rolls Royce, he's talking about his money, he's talking about this, that, and the other thing. And by the end, you go, that guy's a douchebag. But I really feel like Kanye West is a guy you hang out with and go, wow, that guy's a douchebag. Not because he was fucking flaunting his shit or because he was full of himself, but just because, you know what I mean? You meet those people that are just fucking douchebags.
And I don't really feel that ultimately affects it. Does that make sense? I feel that is immaterial to the actual.
You know what? It shouldn't affect the way that I feel about it, but it does.
But I mean, here's one for you. It is famously known that Denzel Washington is a jerk.
Yeah.
But I can watch Denzel Washington movies and be okay with it. I mean, I know he's a jerk and he's not a nice person, has been attested by multiple people, but, you know, I don't know. I can separate the person from the art. And even in Kanye West's, you know, example where, you know, a lot of ways he is his art, which he makes himself in, you know, in link to, I find that interesting. And granted, I think we can all agree that, jerky people are much more interesting than nice people.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. You wouldn't watch a show where everybody got along and hung out and that was the show. You watch a show where everybody was kind of disagreeing and had strife and drama. That's why you watch drama, for the drama.
Well, I don't know. I'm quite the opposite. I don't like any of that, but you know, that's another story.
There we go.
But okay. I don't watch shows where people get along either.
All right.
We didn't even get to talk about Ricky Gervais on The Office. We're like way over time. This is going to be a long podcast. So.
All right. Well, that's fine. We can keep going. We're not restricted by anything.
I know we're not restricted by anything, but you know, we're over the hour marker right now. So
over the hour marker right now. That's how that goes.
And no one's going to listen to this if we keep going.
All right.
So
okay.
I think the debate's going to have to rage on. We're going to have to do another one right quick, couple of days, Lauren. Okay.
Sounds good to me.
So this is part one. How about we just do this part one of 2010? How's that sound?
There you go. Sounds good to me.
All right. Lauren and Fritz podcast. I'm Fritz.
I'm Lauren.
All right. Catch you guys later.
Bitch, I'm a monster. No good blood sucker. Fat motherfucker. Now look who's in trouble. As you run through my jungles, all you hear is rumbles. Kanye West samples. Here's one for example.
Gossip, nigga, just stop it. Everybody know
I'm a motherfucking monster.
I'ma need to see your fucking hands at the concert.